Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream podcast, where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media. I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now. Excited to introduce our guest today, Javier Farfan, cultural marketing strategist at National Football League, NFL. What's up and welcome, Javier.
Well, thank you for having me, Mario. I'm super excited to have this conversation. And, you know, you got me in a good day that I'm feeling great. So I'm an open book. So you're going to, any questions you want to hear about, I'm going to let you know.
I love it. We were talking a little bit about the podcast. Things are good. Can't complain. And I think a good way to talk about a little bit what you do, for those maybe not familiar with culture marketing. First mm-hmm. question we kick off, like, how would your friends describe your job? If we had to pull up your friend here and say, hey, what does Javier do? how would they describe your job?
You know, it's funny because people don't know really what I do. All I can say is that people say, Javier is a storyteller. Javier provides an understanding of certain audiences to the NFL and ways to create an authentic connection. I think that's what they would kind of say, not knowing if I'm actually doing a commercial or I'm creating presentations, but they know that I like to tell stories. And the other thing they would say is I'm probably well connected because I'm 2 degrees from a celebrity, a marketer, a brand in some capacity.
What's the number one celebrity that people ask, hey man, do you know, I don't know. Can you connect with
me? You know, I mean, right now, like, everybody cares about Bad Bunny. So I've heard his name come up many, many times because, you know, unfortunately, you know, folks that don't understand this market, you know, gravitates to the biggest thing that they know about. And, you know, which I could get connected to him in many different ways. The woman that I work for, Marissa Solis, did all the Cheeto commercials with him. So there's a connection there. I'm connected through the music people I deal with. So, and I personally have interacted with his management. So, you know, he's probably the one that people have asked about. And of course, I came in at the time when him and Jay Bovin were part of the halftime show.
Okay.
So, There was some thinking behind the rationales and reasonings for the things that we did at that moment in time 3 years ago. 4 years ago? 3 years ago. It's 4 years ago now.
Awesome. And so how would you describe your job then? What is a culture marketing strategist at the NFL?
You know, I actually created the title because, you know, the days of Hispanic marketer, like, it just bothers me because it narrows the opportunity too long. You know, I say I'm a strategist at the end of the day. And my job is to develop authentic relationships and conversations with consumers that are going to help grow the future of this business. That's my job. Latinos are a part of that, but I'm beyond that, right? Because, you know, we're now thinking about how do we think about women? How do we think about young people? How do we think about the LGBTQ community? How do we future-proof this business? And, you know, I work with an awesome team to help give perspectives and ideas and strategies on engaging and then work on facilitating those activations, right? It's not a traditional brand opportunity because in a brand you have a budget, you have outlets to distribute. We're a media company at the end of the day. And our job is to create that fan relationship whichever way we need to do that. So that is kind of what I do. I am a strategist that helps understand how to future-proof this business with certain consumers, Latinos being one of them.
One of the things hitting on that, right, that I like about your storytelling in our industry. And when I talk about our industry, I use multicultural because that's kind of a language. The standard word, right? But you don't believe in multicultural marketing. I think you hinted at that right now, right? yeah, Hispanic marketing, that's just a piece. We're talking about LGBTQ. Can you expand on that? Like you are a important voice in multicultural marketing, yet you don't believe in multicultural marketing. Like what's behind that?
What's behind it is that, you know, I grew up in the world of, you see, I didn't come from a traditional I didn't start my career here. You know, the beginning of my career was, you know, I have a business degree, a psychology degree. I was a consultant, right? And my job was to help businesses think about new opportunities, whatever they were, right? I fell into this, you know, probably my third job out of, like, I did consulting, banking, and then I got into media, and I did it because of a passion of mine. When I was doing the consulting side, I actually started a hip hop magazine with a group of friends of mine when, you know, social media wasn't a part of it. And I was lowest in the totem pole. I just saw a lot of young people figuring out how to be creative. They had a little bit of funding. And, you know, we had Fat Joe, we had Jay-Z, we had Eminem, we had Tribe Called Quest. We had all these guys who we knew that there was something, there was this energy happening in New York in the late 90s that was going to be a really big business. And we went in there and told those stories, right? And I was part of that team that helped tell those stories. So this is pre-Complex, pre all that stuff. Actually, the people that created Mark Echo worked with the teams that we worked on to create Complex, the magazine. So it was pre all that stuff. So in that, I didn't realize I was a culturalist, right? I didn't realize the power that I had was as being a Latino man who grew up in Harlem, where it was 99% African-American, black people, that I was analyzing culture as I went. I was participating in that. And as I went through all the schooling that I'm supposed to do, I went to, you know, Binghamton, Columbia, NYU, I was feeding this energy and this understanding that I didn't know that it was going to be a cultural currency to my career in the future. You know, I became, you know, I was in doing business development for Viacom, and the guy who one of the presidents of the network, he was half Puerto Rican. And he's like, hey, I'm having a problem with this channel. Help me understand what we should do with it. And I raised my hand because I was just like, okay, I could put the business thinking that I've been traditionally kind of learning through the traditional means of education and career and put this cultural kind of side of me. And I was just like, oh, I figured out something that I really like to do. And that was the beginning of something called MTV Tres, right? And that's how we launched that brand. And then I realized, you know, my power, yeah, I do what everybody else that from a business media world can do, but I also am a culturalist by that. And I stuck to that narrative and that opened up doors for me. I went to work at Microsoft and help with Xbox and Zoom and that. Then I went to PepsiCo and then started, you know, doing, you know, what I call cultural branding at that time. I started, I worked at innovation. I created an innovation platform. I ran music and entertainment for them. So it opened up all these doors being true to my powers. And in that, I realized that as I went into these kind of opportunities, they would put me in a box of multicultural marketing and it limited the opportunity. It limited it from a resource perspective because there's systematic systems on how they think about budgeting or how they even think about the opportunity that they put caps on how they think of it versus the general market. That caused me to be like, wow, like they're not really seeing the impact on how to think about it. The second piece of that puzzle was that I felt that it also narrowed the people that I can work with, right? So when I think, oh yeah, Univision, yeah, go talk to those guys. That's your lane, like. And I was just like, it's broader than that, you know. So that caused me to have, you know, not a positive reaction to multicultural because I was like, don't limit me, right? Because I go beyond that. And that's where innovation comes in. And that's how, you know, as I look at the world, I try to innovate and think through that perspective because there's different, you know, temperatures of how you think about Latinoism in this country. You know, I mean, it's not algebra, it's more calculus, right? It's an equation, an algorithm that you have to build to really go after that consumer and make sure that you tune it in, tune it out, depending on need.
One thing that's really resonating with me, I mean, I think some of the, you know, the best marketers, thinkers in our space come from the culture in some capacity. In your case, hip hop. For me, like I studied literature, right? I studied Chicano literature, and that was my passion, and that's what I realized. I'm a storyteller as well, and just coming from that, I think it's super important to think about marketing and the business opportunity. But I think one thing that resonated with me was you're talking about the disconnect, right? You opened up us talking a little bit about the opportunity, not only for the NFL, but for every brand. When we talk about culture, that all the growth in this country is coming from diverse audiences, however you define it. I'm curious, what's your perspective? Why is there a disconnect between, we all know the numbers, maybe we don't, maybe I'm in a bubble. But I think if you're a business person, you know where the growth is coming from this country, just from a purely numbers perspective. Then why are the budgets not commensurate with that growth?
Yeah.
In your opinion.
Okay. So let's, I'm going to break down kind of how you look at the business world, and then I'm going to give you, you know, a more progressive way of what I think the challenges are. So demographics tell you a lot of story, right? But that really tells you a story of just size of the opportunity. You shouldn't, you know, so it just gives you, hey, this is the population, this is how they behave, and this is the growth rate of that. So we understand that. Psychographic kind of talks a little bit about how you get into the mind of that consumer, right? And that gives you enough of information to kind of play that out from a market perspective. But I think that's not enough, because you could become very stereotypical in how you think about it. You have to now add another layer into it, especially now that there's digital and one-to-one and all that stuff. What I call culture graphics, right? You really have to understand the values of the person that you live in, you know, in the West Coast versus what I look at it. And that complicates marketing holistically, right? So I think the complexity of it causes people not to invest the way they need to. That's one piece of it. The second piece that I would say, the more progressive side of it, I think that there is bias in these worlds, right? Because I sit in them. I've been in big corporations and I see how they do it, right? And because they don't understand, and because people have their own projects that they want to push out that they think that is going to work, because marketing is not just business, it's also in intuition, right? And a little bit of that. They're like, I understand this. I know this is hot. In my world, it looks hot. So I'm going to double down. And that Latino stuff, I know it's important, but it doesn't really affect my community. So I get my dollar, you get your 15 cents. Figure it out. And if you show me success, then I may consider to bring it into here. Bad Bunny's a different story, right? Because he was able to break through that paradigm. And now they're like, okay, that feels comfortable to me. I think I could deal with that, right? But folks like the people at the NFL had to make a conscious decision to break that threshold, right? It was Roc Nation, it was J-Lo, it was Shakira, it's folks like myself and Tim to be like, oh, let's lean in on this J Bob and Bad Bunny thing before anybody know him. But guess what happened when we opened that Pandora's box? The world kind of, on top of his genius and his management genius, but it allowed people to be accepting of it, right? So it's the combination of the systematic bias that happens that people don't want to talk about it, because they're like, yeah, we know the numbers, we care about it. But when you're going to have to put the money down, they're going to place the bets they feel comfortable with. And then the other side of it, what I mentioned, is the demographic side of it. Yeah, it tells you kind of what that is. But when you try to really analyze it from a psychological or culture graphic perspective, you know, it gets a little daunting. Can we really tackle that problem or that opportunity?
And so let's jump in, talk a little bit about that. I mean, you're tackling that, right? Like you mentioned, myself, Mexican American, West Coast, Los Angeles.
Yeah.
1.5 generation English dominant, different than a Latino from Texas, from Florida, New York. Like what's the NFL's point of view on the Hispanic fan? And I'm just going to say Hispanic. Let's just start there. I know that it's multi-layered there, how you all approach it, but what's the NFL's point of view on the Hispanic fan? And like, what do we know about the NFL Hispanic fan? And what do people get wrong about it? Like, let's start there.
Yeah, look, the first thing I do, and this is just me being a business person, is you just have to understand, right? Like, don't jump in and make assumptions. You got to understand it. So, you know, there was already a lot of things going on in tactically that they were doing, but, you know, myself and a couple other folks in the business that some people have left already decided, let's research these guys, you know what I'm saying? And make but the research has to be constructed the right way, right? Combination of Spanish speakers, like the spectrum, because as you mentioned, the spectrum you're talking about, and we spent a year understanding them and we came out with information that from there we are now could make, I guess, educated assumptions on how to tackle that challenge. And that's what we did, right? We spent a year figuring it out. We kind of
Number one was research where you're at.
Yeah, we were still doing tactical things out there to test out stuff, and we just have to, you know, do the things that already in the pipe, but we had to understand it. Then we got the research. Okay, now we understand a little bit more. We understand the different types of fans that are out there. And we realize a few things. One is like, we have to get into the young people somehow. We have to get them to want to play the sport, right? Because that's not being reinforced at home, right? Because at home, baseball, soccer is being pushed from the older generation because that's what they understand.
When you say at home, do you mean home countries or home?
Both. Okay. Both. Right, they're not being reinforced in that way to play. So a big part of our strategy is how do we encourage or shine a light on the people that are really embracing the sport and actually being a part of that and celebrating not just the player, but also the families around that. That's a big component, right? You know, create advocacy on participation. Then the second piece of it is like people want to see themselves. You know what I'm saying? It's really that simple. So how do you start constructing within all the media that NFL is, all the players showing that we are fans also, right?
Yeah.
It becomes that's where the intuition comes in. It's like, yeah, I think this guy could play well with that and that. And you start, you know, bringing in, you know, Latinos from all different parts of the world. In the United States, externally, you know, foreign born, Mexican, like you bring it all and you start showing them in the work, right? And then the third piece of that puzzle is tell stories. Start feeding the system, start feeding the media platforms that we have, start feeding social media stories of fans and players and just actual young people playing the game. If you create that type of ecosystem, it starts becoming part of the cultural fabric of what it is to be Latino. And then the last piece that I would say is like the clubs have a lot to do with it, right? I'm at the league level, but there's 32 clubs that are talking to the community locally a lot more than I am. And they know those guys a lot more. So giving them the tools to do that work, you know, I can't do it for the Cowboys. They've been talking to their fan base. There's a lot of Mexican Latino Cowboy fans. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Give them the tools, give them the insight, and give them the confidence to actually do it, you know? And it's okay to fail at times. So really kind of creating that system, and then it starts permeating. And, you know, we've been having success, you know, growth, 4% growth year over year. Viewership is up 8% across the board. We're now up to 35 million fans, 17% of our base. So numbers are looking great. It happens to be that, you know, we're just having a couple of great years of great storylines within the game itself, you know. And then, you know, and one of the interesting facts that I found out, like last year I focused on the fan. This year I focused on players because we had around over 50 players that were of Latino descent that nobody knew. Like, yeah. Let them tell that story on behalf of us. You know, Pacheco, Christian Gonzalez, Elijah Tucker, Veris Tucker, you know, Chris Olave. We have Cubans, Mexicans, Dominicans, like you call it, we have it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And they're proud of it. You know, and they're more like us. They're second generation. So make that connection of who they are and don't talk about them being Latino. Just talk about their families and you'll get the Latino out of it.
Right, right.
Yeah.
No, that's great. And so let's talk about some of the campaigns. I know a big one was like Por la Cultura campaign. Like,
yeah.
How did that come out of research or what was the...
That came out of research because, you know, the way we looked at Hispanic, unfortunately, you know, a few years back is, you know, we cared about the consumer and we thought viewership is important. So we did a couple of deals that you could get the Spanish language. And then we started, you know, some social and video Spanish language content. But, you know, that's not the full spectrum, right? And then they had Hispanic Heritage Month. I went in and all the research said that they want to be talked about year long, whatever, whatever. So I was just like, let's do it. Let's just change that narrative. Let's not focus on Heritage Month and let's call this, you know, a culture campaign.
I love that.
So then as we were kind of coming up with what that name was, you know, at that time, social media was like, we're doing it for the culture with Estamos Haciendo Por la Cultura, Latino gang. So it's just like, let's just lean into where the young people are talking. And that's where Por la Cultura came out of. And now that became a rally call that I can go into the conversations with all the senior leadership, Roger Goodell, and be like, hey, we're doing it for the culture, Por la Cultura. It's a season long, a year long initiative. And that's how we got grounded, you know. And then we started testing how do we actually go out to the public with that. And I started getting designers to come and create merch for us and see if there's an engagement factor to it. And the first time we beta tested it and we did around, you know, 100 pieces of merch and we sold it really quickly. So we're like, okay, there's something here. And then the second year was like, okay, now the merch should come with a campaign. And then we went down that path. And then the third year we decided it's just a campaign. So it kind of evolved as we go. Depending on what tactics we want to leverage, but we leaned in with fashion and social first because those are at the pinnacle of like tastemakers, and we want to make sure that we can touch on them first and see if they gravitate.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because you're there's still some leagues that haven't done that. Like I'm a big NBA fan. That's my thing, and. You know, Laker fan, Los Angeles, majority Latino city. Mm-hmm. And there's like, we get that once a month, the Los Lakers, and that's about it. I mean, I think we were looking in preparation for this podcast, kind of looking at what NFL, what NBA did on social. There was actually nothing on the NBA social last year, which is just wild to me on the Lakers. I mean, they have a Spanish language Laker Twitter, but that's not hitting me, you know?
Exactly. So we understand that we segmented our Latino base, and we know that for us to really get deep in there, it's like we have the, let's call it what we call American Embracers, the English dominant. And then we're tackling kind of more the Spanish speaker with our international partners and creating Mundo NFL. And we now have 79 games in Spanish in the United States. So we have all of our partners broadcasting in that way, but we needed to get kind of like this first generation 200%, and how do we do that? And that's where a lot of the things that we're talking about, that I'm talking about, is we're focused on. That's why we work with Anthony Ramos, you know, to actually be the an ambassador to the Por la Cultura initiative, right? Because, you know, he's like the to, in my eyes, he was like the guy, right? Because he's an NFL fan, but he is like so American, you can't believe it. He's so American, he was Hamilton. That's how American he was.
Yeah.
But still, he was very Latino.
Yeah.
So how do we celebrate that? And I decided to last year to just work with Latino creators. So behind the camera, in front of the camera, everybody that touched it, you know, was Latino. So they gave me their perspective. And I didn't look for traditional Latinos like, you know, no, I'm not talking bad about any Hispanic agency, but I didn't want to go down that path. I was just like, I want Latinos that are dope within their craft.
Right.
So I went to Jesse Torero, who did all the music videos of the 90s and early 2000s for like the rappers and now for the Latinos. I went to Lemon Anderson, who wrote for Kobe and LeBron for Nike, but not for Latin, just for, because he was just good. Yeah. I went to Anthony, who was part of Hamilton. I went to Milani Sanchez, who, you know, who worked for Drake as a stylist. You know, I worked, you know what I mean? I got a breadth of creators that understand just dope shit, you know, so yeah. CeCe, who worked at YouTube Music to help me with the music stuff. So people that, you know, understand the Latinoism, but they didn't lean on that so right. aggressively.
Because that's doing, how you just have to doing think good of, work.
Exactly. And that's how you have to think about American football, right? Because American football is American football at the end of the day.
So let's talk a little bit. I mean, you said talked about not being afraid to fail. I don't want to say that this campaign was a failure because I saw chatter on both sides, pro, but the Enye FL thing. How did that come about? And
So I knew you were going to bring this up, but yeah, let's talk through that. So the funny thing is that Enye NFL, and it's not an Enye, it's a symbol, right? So it wasn't supposed to be like a literal interpretation of an Enye. But when we were just doing research on people, there's a couple of like Latino designers that are very in the Latino market that were using that as a way to express the connection back to the Latino community from a design perspective. It wasn't supposed to be Enya. So I was just like, what if we play with that idea? And that's why I said we launched a merch collab first and we sold all of it. So it worked, but yeah. We didn't talk about it as Enya NFL. Then year two, we doubled down on that and we actually use it in a motion graphic. The challenge is like when I'm doing it as a pilot and when you create the entire system at the NFL to turn it on, that becomes a little bit more of a coordinated effort. So before the TV campaign came out, which we should have gone out probably first with the TV campaign, you know, there was a post that was put on Twitter, which is probably not the first channel to put something on, that just had the logo, that lockup, and then, you know, said something a little bit too broad without the context of all the things that are coming.
Right.
So you put it on Twitter, you know what happens? All the and you know, we have a wide range of fans, right? You know, outside even of Latino, we have a wide range of fans. So people have perspective of us leaning into more inclusive marketing. And they had an opinion on that. And yeah. Then that opinion, you know, started getting shared out. And then it became a monster in its own without having the full context of it.
Yeah.
And that's that moment in time. Those 5 days were probably the worst 5 days of my career at the NFL. But, you know, kudos to my CMO, Tim Ellis. Kudos to Marissa Solis, who's the SVP of brand. They were like, yo, don't listen to the noise. Just keep on doing what we did. And we showed the breadth of what we did, you know, which was the Anthony Ramos, the J Balvin, you know, all the content that we created, you know, the mixtape that we created with like 9 artists. Like we did a ton of stuff under the same umbrella. We just didn't talk about that negativity that happened. Unfortunately, you know, and that's not, you know, that's just the world we live in. If you don't get the full context, you think that's all it is, right? And, you know, and this year we're not shying away from that. We're just being much more conscious of when we use that, if we use it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's actually what I found in my research, right? That when the really it was Twitter, right? I mean, it was Twitter.
It was just Twitter.
And when I started to dig in to do research for it, I realized that that campaign had already been live for a year and was successful.
To your point.
But then it just, I don't know, it just blew up on there. And so,
that post itself caused.
But see, drama. But I like this. There's a lesson here, right? Because our listeners are in multicultural marketing. They're in marketing in general and insights is that you stuck with it, right? And it's like it blew over. You didn't back up from investing in the community. And so I think there's a big lesson there, which is great. I mean, but maybe you're in a different position than other companies, but you had the support, executive support, which is just so important.
Yeah, that's at the end of the day. I mean, there was a ton of conversations. Don't get me wrong. There was a ton of conversation, but it's the support, right? So we have a leader that's fearless. Like we did the same thing with LGBTQ and, you know, football is for everyone, right?
Whenever you're being more inclusive, there's going to be backlash. And so you got to double down on it.
Exactly right. So there was already confidence going in and, you know, knowing, understanding, we had to just kind of bury through it. The other thing is that, you know, at that time, you know, the second wave of Por La Cultura, Marissa Solis just started. And, you know, Marissa and I know each other from our Pepsi days. She was on Frito, I was on Pepsi. So we knew each other and she understood my work ethic and my thought process. And she stuck by me, you know what I'm saying? So, and she's fearless. Like, let me tell you, she's a boss, right? So she was able to like, nah, we're going to stick through it. They don't get it. Like they need to get it. And she was an avid supporter at times when I wasn't. I was like, what do we do? Like, do I back off, you know?
What I love about this, right, and for listeners out there, like we're talking to a brand, the NFL, that I think most people see as a conservative brand, right? That what isn't necessarily leaning into inclusivity. And you're talking about, you know, the Enya campaign, the LGBTQ campaign. I mean, I think like if the NFL can do it, mm-hmm. other brands should not be afraid to do it, yeah. Right? I mean, I think that's a big lesson there.
Yeah, but also it's also like providing them with the information, the support of how we do it. You know what I'm saying? Like if you just give it to them without giving them context, without giving them, you know, what scenarios could be, like you have to give them the context, you have to give them the confidence, you have to give them how people are going to react, you know? So, but it also helps that, you know, Marissa is a Latina in a very senior role, you know, that also helps. You know what I mean?
I have, you know, some of the guests we have on here are DE&I because I think a lot of people, this used to be me. I used to think of DE&I and corporations and multicultural marketing as two separate things.
They are though.
They are, but there's a strong relationship there
Very strong.
You have to have diverse leadership for multicultural marketing to work in my, like.
I agree with that. But just understand, Marissa Solis is the head of brand marketing. She runs every piece of creative that goes out from the main spot. She works with Tim Ellis to create that. And with a bunch of this, it's a huge organization. So it just happens that, you know, the multicultural side of it, the Latino side of it is under her world too. So, but she understands it because she lives it. And she's done it before. So it's like, she gets it, you know?
And that's important. I mean, that right there is diversity driving business growth, not for diversity's sake, but because she's a marketer that has that lived experience.
Exactly right. And that's where you see the power of bringing in a diverse hire at that senior level, unlock this.
Right.
Because it's allowing us to do you know, really amazing stuff. Innovative and creative side, creative work that probably people, you know, would be like, I don't know, Javier, you know, stick to this box and stay there, you know, versus she's like, I get you, Javs, like, let's go.
Well, let's talk about one of those campaigns. I mean, I think one of my favorite was the Diana Flores campaign. Like, for those not familiar, like, tell us how that came about, like, what, and a little bit about the campaign, a little bit of background, because I think it's phenomenal.
So what I would say to that particular campaign, that's part of Por La Cultura, also, just so you know. So, that was the NFL's Super Bowl spot, because, you know, NFL has, you know, some inventory within, you know, within the Super Bowl game. And we always have some type of key messaging that we want to relay during that time. And there's been a ton of work, amazing work that Tim Ellis has done and put it there. I think this particular year, Marissa just started. And when I was presenting Por La Cultura, I said, look, there needs to be three beats to this puzzle. The first one is like launching the campaign, which is connected to Heritage Month, but it's about like the fan. The second one is about this Mexico game. And let's talk about cross-border pride. And the last piece is about really celebrating, you know, the future of the game. That's all we kind of, that was kind of the strategy, right? But having somebody at that leadership level say, maybe there's something here to lean in. So, you know, we partnered collectively, the entire organization, with an amazing agency called 72 and Sunny that, you know, doesn't focus on Latino market. They're just great advertising agency, right? And they gave them that challenge. LA-based. Gave them that challenge. And, you know, there was a ton of ideas that came through, you know, a ton of them. And through iteration, through conversation, through like, hey, this might not sound, you know, the intuitive side of her and Tim and the team and the analysis that we did, you know, and we knew flag football. I mean, the announcement just happened. So we knew flag football was getting into this Olympic conversation. How do we lean into that? You know, so all of those things kind of played into this idea of like the future fan, right? Think about the future fan. So how do we make sure that we signal to women? How do we signal to young people? How do we signal to an international audience what we're doing with the creative masterminds of 72 and Sunny? And boom, we came out with the spot, which made her, Diana, a star, you know? Yeah. And you'll see more of her as we're thinking about this coming Super Bowl, all the stuff that we're doing, what we're doing with the Olympic stuff. Like, you're starting to see her voice a lot more and more. But yeah, so that's how we got to it, right? It was a small hint of an idea of how Por La Cultura happens. Then it became a strategic initiative as we think about growth audiences. And then it's really, you know, Marissa's leadership, Tim's, you know, ability to see, and the creative chops of 72 and Sunny to actually produce something so beautiful, so powerful.
And it hits also like within the spot, right?
Yeah.
We were talking about the family perspective. I mean, that it did it so beautifully.
My point is like, it's, you know, a lot of people like to take credit, like these multicultural, you know, I didn't know. It was like, if you are respected and if you push that agenda, you know, you unlock the tools of the machine to actually make something beautiful. Cause, you know, I couldn't make that thing. It was the power of all those people,
yeah,
you know, to take it to that level.
And so, obviously Diana's a star, like it did what well, but I'm curious, like from the NFL's perspective, I'm sure it was successful, but like, how did you measure that success? What like social media measures?
Of course. I gave you a lot of the measures that, at least from a Latino perspective, I was looking at. It's like NFL brand perception. Double digit growth on all the factors.
Yeah.
Boom. Viewership, it's not, that has nothing to do with viewership, but it kind of connects back to it. You know, we're hitting those marks. What else did we have? Growth on our fan base increased across the board. Like everything that we were looking at measuring, because we actually set, you know, what our goals were at the beginning of the season, we hit them and even went beyond that. And we got accolades from folks on the campaign. You know, even on the, we did an extension of that through Mundo NFL, which is our Spanish speaking platform. We created a documentary. We got our first sports Emmy on a Spanish doc that we did. You know, I mean, like we're just opening up a lot of doors just from, you know, just pushing that strategic thought process as we plan for the future, you know, for the season.
What, so one thing, this is, I should have done more research, but I'm just curious, like how, if at all, is the NFL involved with flag football? What is that? What is that relationship?
We're hugely involved.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So we work. And so within the team that I'm a part of, is called Growth Audiences, under the leadership of a woman called Sarah Bishop. Our mandate is also to go after young people and also open it up to women also, you know, so as we think about football, how do we, you know, find the most inclusive way to have people participate? Flag football is a part of that. So we leaned in on that. We started working with each of the clubs to actually create more people and advocacy and really brand flag football as, you know, as a sport for you. And that's what we've been doing. So that has been a lot of the work that we're doing. That's why I say participation is key, right?
Right.
So one of the things that I'm doing now as part of the Por la Cultura initiative is we are partnered with the Hispanic Heritage Foundation. And we've worked with them and all the 32 clubs to pick one Latina and one Latino that play flag or tackle football and honor them at a game. That happened. So now we have, you know, 64 kids that have been recognized by NFL that are Latino that say, hey, we like you because of what you did. Now we're going to celebrate them through the season. And then we're going to pick 8 of them that are going to go to Super Bowl. We're going to do that every year to create demand, right? Yeah. To celebrate the player, but also the family around them and say, you know, we respect you for caring about football.
Yeah.
You know?
No,
and we see that there's a lot of characteristics of Latino family values to the characteristics of building, you know, a player within the sport. And we try to match that.
That's great. I knew there was involvement, and it's obviously, I'm actually just seeing more too, like of my friends on social media of like kids playing flag football that I didn't see a year ago.
That's intentional.
Yeah, which is great. This has been awesome. Before we wrap up, I want to talk, like, what have you been reading, watching, listening to on the personal side? Like, what's inspiring you right now?
Honestly, who inspires the hell out of me, because I also teach. So I teach at Syracuse University, the Newhouse. And, you know, I'm just in this vibe of just, of like what it is to be a thought leader.
Yeah.
To young people, not just to the industry, because that's a whole other conversation. Like,
yeah.
Professor Galloway, like, I don't know. Do you know who Professor Galloway is?
I know. What, Scott Galloway, the marketing?
Yeah, Scott Galloway. Yeah. I love that dude. So he actually inspires me, because he actually, I just love all the things he does, the way he advocates for men, young men. And the challenges that they're having, all of that stuff is pretty inspiring. So I'm there from a podcast perspective. I'm leaning in a lot and learning from that process and seeing how, as I'm thinking about my curriculum, as I'm thinking about what I want to kind of educate the world about, how do I put it in a perspective that's really my own? And I think that's what he's been able to do. And I would say just there's also, you know, this movement on Latina feminism that I think is really interesting, because it actually is really redefining the aspect of, you know, family dynamics, femininity and masculinity within a Latino household, which I think is pretty fascinating, which is going to have ripple effects on, you know, what products we deal with, how we act as a unit now, you know, the idea of, you know, a redefined family structure, like all that stuff is happening. I find pretty fascinating too.
Yeah, I have been thinking about that as well too. Interestingly, right, as a father, and there's something interesting happening there within Latino families, right? I think there's
exactly
there's this whole idea of machismo, yeah, and traditional gender roles,
yeah.
Yet I feel like in the millennial and younger generations, there's been an abrupt change in that, and I'm like, what's the relationship there, right? Is it machismo? Is it changing gender roles? I don't know.
It's all
disconnect though. Yeah,
it's all of it, and then there's a and I think Latino feminism is actually driving a lot of it.
Yeah,
right. Because they were always, you know, the matriarch and the foundation of the family, but now they're having a voice in it.
Right.
Right. So then as men, we have to figure out how do we, you know, show our strength in that, but also, you know, provide, become an ally to that evolvement, but also not lose ourselves in it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's a whole other conversation we should have.
Yeah, no. And there's an interest. I mean, and then like in Latin America, I mean, I'm thinking of Mexico specifically, right? Like, yeah. There's so much movement there. You had large protests, Mexican feminists. It looks like Mexico might have its first female president, which is another thing that made me think about it, right? You think about, yeah, Mexico machismo
leadership,
but like now you have a country here that it's going to have potentially a first female president before the U.S. does, which is pretty. Flips the script, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I've been spending a lot of time in Mexico, and I love it. Mexico City specifically, but there's much to learn there for us, you know?
Agreed. Yeah. So what game you watching? The games this Friday? What's the spread at the Farfan pad?
we don't bet, but you know what? My team, you know,
food spread. I mean, food spread.
Oh, okay. Got it.
not the bets.
No. I was going to say, I don't bet. Honestly, I'm a pescatarian. So we're okay. Very conscious about how we eat. My son has never eaten a piece of meat or a piece of chicken in his life. He's 9 years old. So we're very conscious about what we have at the home. So, yeah. and I'm limiting my drinking too. So I'm a very boring like host. So it's like natural drinks, you know, hummus, you know, maybe some chips, you know, and pizza, you know, that's probably like what it looks like.
You got the Mediterranean.
Exactly.
Mediterranean diet, some pizza. Okay. I could dig it.
Yeah. And if my mom is around, then we'll do some Ecuadorian food, because there's a ton of vegetarian stuff that she makes for us now with that Ecuadorian like flavor.
Nice.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Javier, for joining. This was a great conversation. I feel like we could have got another hour. Appreciate you on. And thank you, everybody, for listening. If people want to connect with you online, what's the best way to connect?
Just LinkedIn, you know, just look me up, Javier Farfan. That's probably the best way to do it. You know, I'm on Instagram, but I'm not actively posting and stuff like that. LinkedIn is probably the best way.
Sounds good. Thanks again, Javier. And thanks everybody for listening.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate you.
Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform. Final thank you to our producer, Lucas Martinez, who created our intro music and makes our podcast sound great. To email him, reach out to martinez.lucas.a@gmail.com.